In the 4+ years that I have been watching New Japan and have become a fan of the product and trying to understand the factions and all the tournaments they do and the Wrestle Kingdoms, the Dominions, the G1 Climaxes, the Kings of Pro Wrestling, there are two things I do love about New Japan Pro Wrestling. One of them is actually their tournaments that they hold every single year. And they hold three major ones, that being the New Japan Cup, the G1 Climax tournament, which is the most prestigious. They do actually know there's a fourth there, another one in there too, with the Super Junior Tag League. And then there's the World Tag League, the Heavyweight Tag Team Super Bowl of tag team wrestling. I always look forward to to New Japan's tournaments. But the World Tag League, as much as I love the G1 Climax, and don't get me wrong, it's probably one of the best tournaments I see all year as a professional wrestling fan. The World Tag League holds a special place in my heart for the simple fact that I love tag team wrestling. As much as I shit on WWE for not producing quality tag team wrestling on a show that we will not name on Monday nights, and they barely have a tag team division going on Tuesdays with SmackDown Live, I know that at least with New Japan Pro Wrestling, I get quality tag team wrestling. And the World Tag League is probably some of the best stuff you'll see all year. If you're a tag team, aficionado, a tag team wrestling fan, if you just love tag team wrestling for the simple fact that you grew up on good tag team wrestling way back when. The teams that they've had in this tournament, and I always say when it comes to certain tournaments like the G1, it's hard for me to keep up with actual results as they're going through the days of the tournament. I mean, we all have lives, we all have working careers and jobs and all that stuff. So when I get to sit down and watch the World Tag League final that I have been for the past couple of years, and understanding the history of it, especially since 2012 when Karl Anderson and Hirooki Goto won the first version of the World Tag League with those sweet ass fucking trophies, by the way, it becomes a bit more of a spectacle, but it makes me even that much happier to see a product that understands that tag team wrestling matters. So much so that they have a junior heavyweight and a heavyweight tag team championships. And on top of that they actually have six-man tag team titles for the never version of their tag titles. The World Tag League final show this year, and I literally finished watching it about 20 minutes ago, so it's fresh on my mind, was probably some of the best tag team wrestling I had seen all year. I mean, the tag final itself between LIJ's Evil and Sonata and BCOG's Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa was fucking fantastic. If you're a New Japan fan, you saw, of course, you see names like Kojima, Tenzan. You get to see guys like Marty Skrull, the Young Bucks. You get to see guys like Shingo Takagi and Bushi, Roppongi 3K, even though they weren't in a tournament. You get to see the Killer Elite Squad, Suzuki and Iizuka. Michael Elgin and Jeff Cobb actually were part of this tournament. The Best Friends, Beretta and Chucky T. It's just a cornucopia of the best heavyweight tag teams that New Japan has to offer. And honestly, for my money, for my $8, $9 every single month, I get to go back and watch that. it brings me back to a time where I was like 9, 10 years old watching, tag teams, like D-Generation X, like the New Age Outlaws, like Hall and Nash, and teams like that. And some of the matches that they put on, the Steiner brothers, all those types of all those guys. And I think back to that, and they are, I feel as if there's like a bit of they bring back the renaissance of what tag team wrestling should be. Excuse me. I can sit down and watch tag team match after tag team match that I watched on this card over the past couple of days while I've been working. And then I get to sit down this morning because I woke up very early for no apparent fucking reason, other than just making sure I was able to record this. And I get to watch some of the best tag team wrestling in the world, hands down. There is no other tournament like this that you see anywhere else in the world. What other place do you get to see the best of the best tag teams face each other in a one-block format over a 3-week span for the chance to be part of the main card at Wrestle Kingdom 13 and challenge for the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championships? Guys like Gallo and Anderson won this tournament. Evil and Sanada are defending the titles, during this tournament, getting a shot at the to get one more chance to become IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Champions. Hirooki Goto can say he's won a tournament. Karl Anderson is the was the first one to ever win it twice with two different tag teams. Goto became the second guy to win it with two different tag teams when he and Shibata won the title. I believe it was 2015, 2016, somewhere around there. And on the road to Wrestle Kingdom, it's tournaments like these and it's shows like these that make me happy that because we're literally 3 weeks, almost 3 weeks away. We're 23 days away from their biggest show of the year. That's the this is the first pay that'll be the first pay-per-view we get to see in 2019. That will kick off one of the best months of wrestling all year. Not just in New Japan, but for NXT, NXT UK, and you can put WWE in there as long as they don't fuck it up with the Royal Rumble. But after this show, there's a couple more shows that are going down. The 5th, 14th and the 15th, if I'm not mistaken, it's the Road to Wrestle Kingdom shows. After this coming weekend, we wait. A little bit more than 2 weeks before Wrestle Kingdom, we then you get the pomp and circumstance. You get the press conferences. You have every person who's going to be on that card that's going to be involved with the pay-per-view in one place. But this now kickstarts the road. After this event, we are now on the road. We are officially on the road to Wrestle Kingdom 13. Everything about this card that we're going to talk about today on this episode was so much fun to watch. Even for the young lions like Ayato Yoshida and Shota Umino, who are making their trying to gain up in the ranks of, trying to become graduating from the dojo. Veterans like, Yuji Nagata, Manabu Nakanishi, guys who have been here before, who have been part of the tournament, names like Roppongi 3K being part of the show, all the rivalries that have been ongoing since King of Pro Wrestling back on November 3rd. Ishii and Zack Sabre Jr. going head to, getting involved in a match ahead of their Rev Pro British Undisputed British Heavyweight Championship match. Roppongi 3K and with El Desperado, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, Takagi and Bushi, having matches on the way on their road to their Triple Threat Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Title match at Wrestle Kingdom 13. Okada and Jay White being involved, Ishimori and Kushida, they're going to be going against each other for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title. This, what New Japan is doing, is what I wish WWE was doing as we now are assuming after this coming Sunday on the road to the Royal Rumble, we should be getting certain matches like this that begin to heat up rivalries even more. They've been working, New Japan's been working on their rivalries since G1 back in August. You know, when Tanahashi got that 3 count beating Ibushi, they started their road immediately. They had long-term planning for this. I guess they had their plan set. I'm not sure exactly when, but I would say probably September, October, they started to have those plans in place. They were looking at the long-term booking for January 4th, and now we're literally close to 3 weeks away from this event. After this, they now have their plans in place. Everything is now officially in place. I see at this point, New Japan, after World Tag League, can do no wrong now on their road to Wrestle Kingdom 13. You as a professional wrestling fan should be excited. If this will be your first time taking in the spectacle that is going to be Wrestle Kingdom 13 in 3 weeks, just wait. You know, if this is your third, fourth, fifth time, like it will be for me, I think this will be my fourth, fifth road to Wrestle Kingdom. I'm still hype, you know. I'm more hype right now for Wrestle Kingdom 13 than I am for WrestleMania. And we're literally close to what? 4 months away from that? Less than 4 months away from that? You know what I mean? It's I love this feeling of a big show. I love this feeling of knowing that we're so close to what's about to go down in a few weeks' time. But it all kickstarts with the World Tag League. This is episode 32 of the Young Lions Perspective. And with that being said, let us begin. What's going on, guys? Zach from the Wrestling of the Issues podcast here, and welcome to episode 32 of the Young Lions Perspective. So glad to have you guys here with me today, wherever you may be, wherever you are in the world. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day, your night, your afternoon, your brunch, your gym time, your snack time, whatever you may be doing at this very exact moment. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast. As always, I greatly and truly appreciate it. And today, of course, World Tag League review. I'm so excited to be talking about this. We are officially on the road to Wrestle Kingdom. That went down on Sunday. Like I said in the opening segment, the cold open, I believe we are now officially on the road to the Tokyo Dome. Less than almost a little bit over 3 weeks away from the spectacle that is going to be Wrestle Kingdom 13. And we had to figure out some things in terms of which tag team was going to be dubbed the best in the world. According to New Japan, of course, some of you may have a different opinion as to who you believe in the best in the world. But in terms of New Japan's tournament, this is what matters. For the most part, the majority of the matches were tag team matches. I did not mind that one bit. Every match, for the most part, involved teams that were involved in this tournament. It was a one block instead of a two block tournament. Usually they have a two-block tournament. You face everybody in your block. Whoever has the most wins, most points, would represent their block in the championship and the championship final. This time around, they actually had one block. I believe it was like 12 to 16, somewhere between 12 and 16 teams. So you faced everybody in your block over a span of like close to 3 weeks. Top two teams would be involved in the final. And that actually, and those two teams turned out to be a rematch of last year's final between the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, and LIJ's Evil and Sonata, the defending World Tag League champions. But before we get into that, let's start with the opening match that involved Ayato Yoshida, Yoshota Umino, Togi Makabe, and Toa Hanare taking on Yuji Nagata, Manabu Nakanishi, Satoshi Kojima, and Hiroyoshi Tenzan. And yes, I practiced every single name before I started this review because I wanted to make sure I pronounced it absolutely perfect, or as close to perfect as possible. This wasn't really long of a match, about close to 8 minutes, but pretty much had all of the veterans hitting their trademark moves, going after their opponents in the match. The highlights of this match, though, were a double lariat from Makabe, Tenzan hitting some Mongolian chops. There was a diving tackle from Hanare that was really nice. And I really want to say, Toa Hanare during this tournament, from what Kevin Kelly had said, really grew into his own, especially, I believe his tag partner was Makabe in this tournament. And I love me some Togi Makabe, the Unchained Gorilla. I love the fact that Hanare is working with very, very prominent veterans. I believe he worked with Tanahashi for a majority, after the G1 Climax. They had their little tour of the Destruction Tour. He's been working with a lot of veterans, and I love the fact that they've started pushing Hanare just a little bit, even though he was in the opening match. The ending had seen, though, Kojima hitting Yoshida with a DDT, hitting his trademark machine gun chops, then hit a Koji Cutter on Yoshida. But Yoshida tried to counter that into a near fall off a backslide. But Kojima slipped out of that, hits him with a strong lariat, gets the victory for his team. Nagata, Nakanishi, Kojima, and Tenzan get the victory in the opening matchup. So it's always good to see all the teams involved in the tournament getting a little bit of momentum, or try to get a little bit of momentum before we head into the road to Wrestle Kingdom 13. Really nice to see Yoshida and Umino. They're two of the best names right now from the class that they're involved in right now. Umino, I believe, is so far leading the class in terms of what the dojo is seeing from them. I liked Umino a lot in this match. I liked Yoshida too. These two are definite names you want to look out for over the next couple of years. I think both of them will be involved in the junior heavyweight tag team division if they decide to keep them as a tag team, or if they decide to split ways and actually go on a singles route. I believe, in my mind, Umino will probably graduate first, start his tour, his little excursion that they usually do for graduates of the dojo. Let him go out to Ring of Honor, CMLL, maybe some UK promotions. Let him do some things there. And then have him come back and begin his seven-match. I would consider it like a seven-match testing of sorts, going up against big names. I know Hanare was the last one to actually, if my memory serves me right, had his seven matches against names like Elgin and Jay White. And that was really nice to see the growth from him match after match. So I'm going to go with Umino becoming the first graduate of the two to have his excursion. And then I think Yoshida will probably come after. I love Umino. I love Yoshida. Those are two names you're going to want to look out for. But the veterans do get the victory in the opening matchup. The next tag match that came about was another eight-man tag between Michael Elgin, Jeff Cobb, and the Best Friends, Beretta and Chucky T, taking on Minoru Suzuki, Takashi Iizuka, and the Killer Elite Squad, the team of Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr. Kevin Kelly had stated that throughout this tournament, Beretta and Chucky T had I'm not saying it was a little bit of a falling out, but Chucky T had caused a few disqualifications during this tournament and resulted of losing out on six possible points. And by Kevin Kelly's math, they would have been in the running to be a part of the World Tag League final had they actually won the matches, instead of Chucky T being disqualified for his actions in certain matches. So Beretta, it looked like when Beretta and Chucky T came out, they were still on the same page. It looked like they were on the same page, that they had it together. Beretta had to have an intervention with Chucky T. Of course, Killer Elite Squad, one of the best heavyweight tag teams in New Japan. Suzuki, nothing needs to be said. Iizuka, though, the boy is crazy. If you did watch this show, the man comes out in the crowd with a mask on, with a fucking muzzle, comes out with like a sling of sorts and has this iron glove that he uses sometimes on his opponents. I would consider him like the wild dog of Suzuki-gun. He's not really prominent in terms of like championships or anything like that, but he does get involved for a majority of the tag matches they're involved. He was tagged up with Suzuki for a majority of this tournament. This was actually also a nice little eight-man tag. Suzuki-gun in Suzuki-gun fashion, jumping their opponents before the bout even started. While Suzuki, Iizuka, and Archer were going after Elgin, Jeff Cobb, and actually, no, it was Cobb, Beretta, and Chucky T on the outside. Smith and Elgin actually started the match. A very nice exchange between these two in the ring. I love seeing Michael Elgin do his thing in there. The highlights of this match had, you saw Smith hitting a knee strike, goes for a kip up, showing off his agility, hitting a top rope superplex on Elgin from the top rope. Cobb and Archer get tagged in, and the two started exchanging blows. On a side note, I had not really seen much of Jeff Cobb prior to seeing him in the G1 Climax tournament. I knew of him. I had heard of him. I heard he, of course, he's a former Olympian. I'm assuming in weightlifting because that boy looked like he can lift his ass off. But I never really heard much of him. But ever since I had seen him since the G1, he has been kicking all kinds of ass. I know that he had won the prestigious Battle of Los Angeles tournament. He then beat Walter to win the PWG World Championship. So that's a huge honor, not only to beat Walter, but to become a PWG World Champion with names like, of course, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, you know, names like that. And to have that belt is a damn high honor. It's a belt that I hold very high in my mind in terms of independent wrestling championship titles. It's one of those things where I really enjoy, you know, seeing, you know, prominent names in the tournament. But Cobb and Archer, Cobb hit an angle slam on Archer and turned that into a double down. Then Chucky and Suzuki were tagged in. And this was the point of the match that I really, really liked. When it comes to Minoru Suzuki, and I had talked about this on the King of Pro Wrestling review, one thing you don't want to do if you're not up for the task is to trade blow for blow with Minoru Suzuki. The man has been in the business for as long as I literally have been alive. I've literally been alive for 30 years. Suzuki has been doing this doing his thing in this business as long as I've been alive. And what I've learned over the past couple of years is that you don't trade blows with Suzuki. He tried, though. I'll give him points for Chuck E. T. trying to go blow for blow with Suzuki. What I really enjoyed about this spot here was that Cobb, Elgin, and Beretta were on one side of the ring watching this all go down. And then you saw, you know, Iizuka and the Killer Elite Squad on the other side pretty much cheering blow for blow with Suzuki. In my mind, I was thinking, excuse me, Chucky, either you get this man down immediately or you're going to die. So Chucky actually throws starts throwing a shot. Suzuki throws one back. Chucky staggers a little bit, but nothing to the point where he's about to fall on his ass. He throws another strike. Suzuki hits a little bit harder. Chucky comes back with three forearm strikes, and all you literally heard, and I'm going to try this as best as I can. It's probably going to hurt my arm a little bit, but I'm going to try my best to recreate the shot that Suzuki did. It goes like this. Chucky T damn near fell on his ass. His three to Suzuki's one. And he damn near got knocked the fuck out. He picks up Chucky again, hits him with an even stronger forearm strike that laid him out. And then picked him up one more time and then laid him out again. So there was a bit of concern for Chucky T. And even on commentary, by the way, Kevin Kelly, Rocky Romero, and Excalibur, I've heard of him before. I believe he was a part of ROH. Those three on commentary are absolutely fantastic. If you want to talk about a trio on commentary anywhere in the game right now, besides Byron Saxton. Fuck Byron Saxton, that piece of shit that thinks he's a damn commentator. He can kiss my ass. Besides, I would say Rinaldo McGuinness and Percy Watson. That's the best three-man team in the game right now. I'm not sure if Excalibur will be a part of Wrestle Kingdom 13's commentary on January 4th, but I hope that he is. Because the way they actually commentated on this exchange between the two was absolutely dead on perfect. I believe Excalibur said that, you don't want to trade shots with Suzuki. Romero, and the oohs and the ohs and the was absolutely perfect, and I love every single bit of that. Even, mind you, I'm sitting at work on my lunch break watching this, and I was even cringing to the point where people were probably looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with this dude? I work with this guy? He's fucking weird. Anyway, back to the match. So Suzuki then tagged Azuki after he lays out Chuck E. T., removes the muzzle. He hadn't even removed his muzzle yet, and then actually went after Chuck E. T. and actually went to bite his head. Man was trying to take a chunk off of Booker T. My God. Chuck E. T. trying to take a chunk off his head. I believe he went into the corner and actually bit Beretta's head afterwards. But Chuck E. comes back, hits Soul Food, which is the same finisher that Mia Yim has, then tags in Beretta. Beretta went on the attack, went after Izuka. Suzuki then pretty much cleared their apron after Beretta tried to go after Izuka, then assaulted Beretta with a 4-on-1 attack. They went for the pin. Elgin jumps in, breaks it up. Izuka then goes for the iron glove that he has. Now, it's not a full-on iron glove, but it covers 4 of the fingers that he had. The referee tried to stop him from using the iron glove to attack. But while all of that was going on, Chuck E. T. comes in with a steel chair, and I think he just went ballistic because he cracked everybody besides Beretta with a steel chair. And this was the MO of the tournament for the best friends, that Chuck E. T. was pretty much going off on everybody and causing disqualifications. He did it again here. He hit Izuka, hit Suzuki, hit Archer, hit Smith. He even hit his own teammates, Elgin and Cobb, and was just, he went psycho on everybody. And that caused a disqualification. The referee had no choice but to ring the, go for the call for the bell. And that gave the victory, for Suzuki, Izuka, and the Killer Elite Squad. And after the match, I even saw that Suzuki was heated and was trying to get back in the ring to go after Chuck E. T., but the Young Lions had to stop him before all hell broke fucking loose, because he was pissed. And Beretta immediately threw him to the outside, and they went to toward the back with Beretta berating him. Try to say that 5 times fast. And literally, like, having to rip the chair out of Chuck E. T.'s hands going into the back. And I don't know what this means for the best friends going forward, but there has to be some kind of intervention between these two. That's not to say they're going to break up anytime soon, but don't be surprised if Beretta, gets to a breaking point and gets all types of pissed off and says, fuck Chuck E. T. Who knows what will happen? I'm going to take a sip of this coffee, and we're going to take a second. Coffee. The happiest thing on earth. Next matchup was actually a 6-man tag team matchup between Tomohiro Ishii, the current reigning and defending Rev Pro, undisputed British heavyweight champion, and Roppongi 3K, Sho and Yo, taking on El Desperado, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and Zack Sabre Jr. Now, El Desperado and Kanemaru are the current IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Roppongi 3K being 1/3 of what's going to be a triple threat match at Wrestle Kingdom 13 for the Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships, going up against Takagi, and Bushi. And then Zack Sabre Jr. is actually the challenger for the Rev Pro Undisputed British Heavyweight Championship, challenging Ishii after he had beat Suzuki to defend his championship at their last Rev Pro's last show. So actually, and this was a really, really good match, really, really good 6-man tag match between these 6 guys. I enjoyed this match heavily, and I enjoyed a lot of New Japan's matches, but when it comes to like tag team matches, they put on a fucking show. Ishii and Sabre actually kicked things off, showing us a little bit of preview of what's going to be happening at the Tokyo Dome for the Rev Pro Championship. Ishii and Sabre kick things off. Ishii immediately goes to trap Sabre's left arm, trying to do a little damage to Sabre Jr., tags in Sho. Sabre wasn't fucking with Ishii's grappling, so when Sho went on the attack and tried to hold the hold on to the hold, man, words are hard nowadays, he immediately reverses that and tags in Desperado. Later on in the match, Sho and Yo hit some tandem offense on Desperado. Sho hit the ropes. Wow, like I said, words are hard. But Kanemaru grabbed his legs from the outside and pulled him to the floor. Kanemaru then hit a leg drop on Sho over the barricade. That was literally gruesome. And that had Suzuki-Goon leaving all 3 members of Chaos lying on the floor. So once they get back inside, Kanemaru started working over Sho with stomps. He then hits a DDT that got a near fall and then tags in Desperado. Cho comes back with a suplex, but Kanemaru jumped in for the double team. Cho hit a spear, but Sabre jumped in to cut him off. Cho finally gets the hot tag to Yo. Yo then hits a back elbow on Desperado and a dragon screw on Kanemaru that left Kanemaru in all types of pain, as any dragon screw leg drop would do for most people. Yo then hits a neck breaker and then hits a low drop kick on Desperado. That guy only got a near fall. Desperado hit a spine buster. He reversed into a spine buster off the ropes from Yo. That turned into a double down. Sabre and Ishii got tags back into the match. Ishii had a counter for all of Sabre's offense. Anything Sabre tried to hit, Ishii countered immediately and hits him with his finisher, the vertical drop brain buster. And that looks all types of serious. After the two pretty much get back up, Sabre hits a Northern Lights suplex on Ishii, sends him into the corner, and then tags out. So then they had a 3-on-1 attack on Ishii, and don't mind the sound in the back. I'm just washing clothes. I keep it real with y'all. I'm doing 7 things at once right now. Don't mind me. Suzuki-Gun then tripled up on Ishii. Kanemaru actually hit deep impact on Ishii. I thought he was actually going on the middle ropes. I thought he was actually going to miss that, and Ishii was going to counter, but Kanemaru hits the move, goes for the pin, but Sho actually makes the save. Desperado comes in the ring and actually hits a lariat on Sho hits a lariat on Desperado. Sabre then jumps in and starts beating up on Sho, then immediately goes after Ishii. Kanemaru in all of this. Now, for those who don't watch New Japan, Kanemaru, when he comes to the ring, always brings a bottle of whiskey. For reasons I'm about to say. So what he tries to do in a certain situation, he tried to spit whiskey at Ishii, trying to blind his eyes, try to mess up his vision. They call it the Sartoru Special. Ishii ducks under that. Sho and Yo hit stereo planches to take out Sabre and Desperado as they were on the outside. Ishii hits Kanemaru with the Brain Buster, his finishing move, and that got the job done and the victory for Ishii and Roppongi 3K at World Tag League. So a little bit of momentum victory for Ishii and Roppongi 3K. Always good to see those boys get up on top, and adds a little bit more dissension between Sabre Jr. and Ishii as we head towards Wrestle Kingdom 13. Now, the next match we had was another 6-man tag match between Chase Owens, who hadn't been part of the tour, making his first match back since, I believe, last month when he was involved in the King of Pro Wrestling show. Kevin Kelly did say a little bit something about that, saying that he wasn't even involved in the tour or the cards all month, and he somehow gets on the card for World Tag League, which gave me a bit of a chuckle on that. Hangman Page, of course, you know, killing it as one had one hell of a 2018 on ROH in New Japan. He's been absolutely killing it on the indies. And Yujiro Takahashi surprisingly didn't bring out one of his ladies to the match. Usually, he always brings a lady out there. I think Peter was the one that he usually brings out, which, by the way, is actually, as far as I remember, Bad Luck Fale's lady. And if you haven't seen her Twitter, thank me later. Anyway, they were going up against Shingo Sakagi, Bushi, and the number one contender for the IWGP Intercontinental Championship, the one himself, the leader of LIJ, Tetsuya Naito. This was a very fun match to watch. Owens and Bushi began the match. Owens got the better of the exchange with the two. He actually hit a bat breaker. Yujiro and then Naito got in tags. Kevin Kelly actually made a point, and I really didn't, and the more I watch New Japan, the more we learn, because pro wrestling, in my honesty, okay, let's try to figure out this again. In all honesty, I did not know Yujiro Takahashi and Tetsuya Naito were actually a tag team way back when. So, like I said, we all learn with professional wrestling. We learn things we never knew, and it's always a good thing. So they actually got a little bit of action in. Bushi actually jumped in for an assist. Naito actually hits a drop kick on Yujiro that allowed Shingo to get the tag. He hits a shoulder block on Yujiro. LIJ starts tripling up on Yujiro, attacking him. Bushi then takes the lead on the match, takes the lead during that point in the match, started choking him with his t-shirt. And you saw Yujiro coughing heavily after the referee had to pull him off after he started choking him. Shingo then gets tagged in, uses a front face lock to keep him grounded. He fires back with a few strikes and hits a nice inverted DDT. Finally, Takahashi gets the tag to him, main page. And this was probably the best part of the match between these two. And I think, honestly, if there's one match I do want to see in 2019, Hangman Page and Shingo Takagi would be one hell of a match to watch. If you watched, if you didn't watch World Tag League or you don't have New Japan, get New Japan World, pay the $8.30 a month, and watch this match with these two involved, because they literally killed it. This was made the match for me. He hits a springboard lariat on Bushi, hits a nice pescado on Naito. He actually got back into the apron, went for the buckshot lariat on Shingo, but missed it. Comes back and hits a nice, a strong lariat on Shingo. Shingo got back up, went for a release German, but Payne actually landed on his feet, showing his agility. He blocked a pumping bomber, blocked that, but Shingo actually got him around with the second. Owens and Bushi get tagged in. Naito jumped in for a double team, but Owens slammed Bushi back into Naito with a nice Uranagi. Actually, it was more of like an inverted DDT rock bottom combination. The strength of that of Owens had to have to actually hold Naito and then pick up Bushi to slam him. That was probably the best spot of the night at this point. It was really nice. You could probably find that on YouTube. It was a really, really nice spot. Probably some of the best stuff I'd seen that all night. So he goes for a package pile driver attempt on Bushi. Shingo breaks it up. Naito comes in the ring and hits a swinging DDT on Owens. He then goes for, his Destino finisher. Owens actually blocked that. Naito comes off the ropes and hits a flying forearm, goes for a second Destino, and gets the victory for his team, with Kevin Kelly in the background yelling Destino for the entirety of the move itself and the three count. I love that. I love little things like that from commentary. I wish more commentators would do that. I know NXT with Moro, he does that shit all the time, but I wish they would allow Cole Graves, Young, Phillips, and Saxon to actually add a little bit more energy to this match, to their matches. Things, little things like that should get you hyped for, you know, an ending sequence to a match. It adds a little bit more, gets you hyped for it, and then you're just like, that was good. That was pretty cool. And I thought that ending portion of the match was pretty nice. Takagi, Bushi, and Naito getting the victory. Move going forward. The next matchup was another six-man tag between Kushida, the current IWGP heavyweight champion, Toru Yano, the craziest producer, hype man for any faction in New Japan. The man's crazy. The man has more of a grind than I do. And Kazuchika Okada, taking on the number one contenders to the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, Taiji Ishimori, Bad Luck Fale, and of course, Okada's main rival at this point, Jay White. This was fucking awesome. This was fucking awesome. This was a fun little match because of the fact that there was two rivalries going on at the same time. If this were just Okada Kushida, Ishimori, Jay White, I personally would have loved this match a little bit more. They would have been a little bit more, you know, dissension between all four guys involved. But adding Yano and Fale added a little bit more of the energy on this. And actually, Okada was tagging for the most part with Yano for the, I believe it was Okada and Yano who were a tag team during this tournament. And I think Jay White was also involved in this tournament as well. So it was very nice to see a little bit extra layer to the cake that is the road to Wrestle Kingdom 13 on full display. So they were waiting for Kushida, Yano, and Okada to come out to the ring. All three members were already in the ring, Fale, White, and Ishimori. And Kushida was actually very hesitant to get into the ring. He was trying to get the referee to back all the guys up so he can get in his ring and do his little thing before he started the match. But the Bullet Club OG members didn't allow him to do it. So when Yano and Okada came out, they were pretty much preparing, getting ready to hype themselves up to run into the ring. Before the match even started, Okada takes his shirt off, Yano takes his shirt off, and they rush Ishimori, Fale, and White, and here we go. We're right at it. Okada Kushida cleared pretty much the Bullet Club out of the ring before the opening bell. Kushida hitting a cartwheel drop kick. When all the dust settled, Kushida and Ishimori ended up being the legal men, while Yano, Okada, White, and Fale were fighting on the outside. Kushida starts working over on Ishimori's left arm. We started getting a preview of their title match at Wrestle Kingdom 13. Ishimori comes back with a seated senton on Kushida, while White and Okada were actually fighting on the ramp. White then applied a single leg crab to apply a little bit of pressure to his lower back, leaving Okada on the rep for the time being. Once they got back in the ring, the Bullet Club started working over on Kushida, trying to wear him down, cutting the ring in half, as you're supposed to do in a solid tag match, and started going to work in their corner. Eventually, Kushida started making his comeback, and finally, Kushida gets the tag to Okada while Ishimori tags in White, and we start getting the preview of their match at Wrestle Kingdom 13. I'm going to be saying those three words a lot, by the way, so be prepared. White hit a suplex on Okada, right into the corner pack. That was a really nice suplex there. White then hits a Saito suplex, and then immediately tags in the underboss, Bad Luck Fale. Okada hits Fale with a dragon screw, trying to take away his base. Then immediately tags in Yano, and of course, beelines it right to the corner pad, takes that off, and beats the back of Fale's head with the corner pad. That got me giggling a little bit. That's his pretty much his bread and butter. And you know, that's that. You know, he's a little bit of a comedy act, so we got that a little bit going. Fale. Yano tried to attempt to get Fale into the corner and hit him on the exposed turnbuckle, but Fale had the wherewithal to reverse it, and Yano's back hits the exposed steel. Fale then clears the apron of all members, and the Bullet Club went 3-on-1 against Yano. Fale hitting a splash. Now, I believe they actually had a corner spot where all three members did corner-to-corner spots. Ishimori hit a clothesline. White hit a hip attack, I believe, and then Fale gets the splash on Yano. And goes for the pin, but Kushida actually breaks up the pinfall. The match started breaking down. Now towards the end of this match, Okada misses the dropkick. Jay White immediately goes for the Blade Runner, misses that. He gets out of that. It's an air raid crash on White, one of his signature moves. Yano used the backslide for a near fall, but Fale recovers. I believe before the end of this match, Fale tried to attempt his finishing move, one of his finishing moves, the grenade, which is literally the same move. If you remember Umaga, he had the Samoan spike, which is pretty much a choke slam with a thumb right into the throat, pretty much destroying your windpipe and taking you out. Went for it once. Yano got out of it. Yano went for the backslide to get the near fall. Fale recovers and then picks him up again. Yano then gets hit with the grenade, gets the three count. Ishimori, Fale, and Jay White get the victory for their team. Now, immediately after the match, Okada hits White with a drop kick. White lays him out with a suplex that dropped him right on his head. Ishimori then attacks Kushida and hits his finishing move, the Bloody Cross. While they were attacking their opponents, Togi Makabe comes from ringside. He was doing commentary on the Japanese side. Runs in to make the save with a chain. And one thing I didn't know, and which I thought was pretty damn cool, Makabe was actually a member of Chaos at one point, way back when. But Chaos ousted him. So it was to their surprise that Makabe actually came in to make the save and tried to attack Ishimori, Fale, Jay White, and Gato, who was at ringside, to make the save. So we don't know what's going on with that, but maybe it leads to something. Makabe on the road to Wrestle Kingdom 13, maybe helping them out to try to take out the Bullet Club OGs. Who knows? But it was really nice to see Makabe make the save with the chain, clearing the ring, and that was the end of that particular segment. We then get into some of the good stuff. We then get into Ryusuke Taguchi, Juice Robinson, one of my favorites, David Finley, the C-Block champion from the G1 Climax, and Hiroshi Tanahashi, the holder of the briefcase that he won back at the G1 Climax, the battle rights contract to be the number one contender to take on Kenny Omega for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. They went up against the Elite, Marty Scurll, the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, and the IWGP Heavyweight Champion himself, Kenny Omega. This was a good mix of comedy and serious stuff. You know, it's nice to see, of course, Taguchi in his usual, you know, old school helmet attire, They were talking about the Rugby World Cup that was going to be held in Japan in 2019. Juice Robinson, of course, the flamboyant one himself, David Finley, and Robinson, I believe they were a tag team during this tour. And Tanahashi, of course, getting prepared to face Omega for the World Heavyweight Championship. Taguchi and Skrull immediately started off with some comedy. Skrull, I believe Taguchi was the one who actually posed first. Skrull doing his usual flapping of the wings, and then Taguchi, doing like some random chicken thing to piss off Skrull a little bit. They had a little bit of an exchange. Nick Jackson and David Finley then get tagged in. Juice jumps in for an early double team, and they hit a double bulldog on Nick Jackson. Matt Jackson comes in right after that, but he ate a double hip toss. Taguchi's team then started beginning their clothesline train spot, with Taguchi actually leading the way, coaching everybody to run into the corner on Nick. Right after that happened, this was a weird little spot, but I enjoyed it. Taguchi actually started doing like baseball signs and said, and right after said, drop kick. So they were trying to tease a quadruple drop kick, but since Nick knew what the spot was, he hung on to the rope, and they all went for the drop kick, and huge miss for all guys involved. Taguchi's team then went for stereo planches, four planches off the top rope. All of them missed, and the elites then started taking over the match. Omega hits a Kitaro Crusher on David Finley in a little I guess a a sequel to the match they had at the Young Lions Project back in Anaheim. Then the Bucks started working over Finley with tandem offense. Skrull started going after Finley's left arm. The Elite, of course, cutting the ring in half, and they're working over Finley in their corner. Finley finally comes back with a backbreaker over the knee, gets the hot tag to Tanahashi, and we finally get to see a preview of the IWGP Heavyweight Championship match that's going to go down in the main event. Tana hits a drop kick to Omega, then goes for the and hits a dragon screw, taking out Omega's knee. The Bucks then get in the ring with stereo super kicks on Tanahashi. They go for a double enziguri, which Tana escaped from, but the Bucks hit Omega. I believe they had Tanahashi in the corner. He flips over Skrull. He takes over. I believe Matt Jackson went first. Nick Jackson went after him. He threw him over, and they usually go for their V-trigger stereo super kicks spot, but they instead hit Omega with that spot. So that was pretty crazy. That was a very nice spot there. Tanahashi blocks a V trigger, but Omega immediately goes for a Snapdragon suplex that took him down. Juice then gets in the ring and starts hitting everyone with a series of juice jabs, pretty much going after everybody. It was 1-1-1-1, and then everybody started catching three or four. Skrull then finally gets a chance to cut him off. Taguchi jumps in. Everyone gets hit with a hip attack, showing off the funky weapon, which is his booty. Juice then hits a cannonball on Matt. Omega then hits a nice little hurricane runner on Taguchi. Tana hit Omega with the sling blade and hits a plancha right after that. Skrull ran into a double flapjack. And then the Bucks hit a double drop kick. And then this was probably the spot of the match here. Taguchi caught a four-way super kick to his face. There was no way he could escape from that. Went for the pinfall. Tanahashi actually broke up the pinfall. In the end, Omega finally hits Tanahashi with a V trigger, and then the Bucks picked up Taguchi, and they hit the Indy Taker for the pinfall and the victory. The Elite defeat Robinson, Finley, Tanahashi, and Taguchi. I almost forgot there. I almost had to replay this shit. This was a really good match between the eight of them. This was absolutely fantastic. I loved, how everybody had their certain spots in the match. I love the little bit of comedy in the beginning between Skrull and Taguchi. Skrull plays that off very, very well. It's always fun to watch any of these guys in the ring, because you're probably going to get a very solid match out of everybody involved. Now, we're going to take a little bit of a quick break. We're going to take a spot for our sponsor to talk a little bit about something, and we're going to then talk about Will Ospreay versus Tai Chi. We're going to talk about the NEVER Openweight Championship with Kota Ibushi and Hirooki Goto. And we're going to talk about the main event between Evil and Sonata and the Gorillas of Destiny with the World Tag League Championship on the line. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. And welcome back. Now we are getting to the fun stuff. the never open weight championship number one contenders match between Will Ospreay and Tai Chi. So the backstory between all of this is that I believe it was at King of Pro Wrestling. Will Ospreay, I believe Tomohiro Ishii and Hiroki Goto were in a six-man tag. I believe it was against Minoru Suzuki, Zack Sabre Jr., and Tai Chi, who was at the time the never open weight champion. This is around the time where Chaos was kind of in dysfunction, trying to find their way again and trying to figure out things. Will Ospreay gets the victory for his Chaos members. In the process, he pinned Tai Chi. Now, within New Japan, challenging for championships is different than usually it would be for like WWE, NXT, and all and every other promotion. Any guy can challenge the champion at any given time after a match. I want to literally come. I've seen it plenty of times. They would come up to the champion, come out of the ring, come out to the ring, and challenge them and declare themselves to be the next challenger for the for whatever championship is involved. In this case, Ospreay pinned the champion, and soon after, he declared that he was challenging Tai Chi for the never open weight title. Unfortunately, Ospreay had suffered what they call an intercostal muscle injury in his ribs, and he was out for a period of time. In the meantime, Goto faced Tai Chi in a opportunity to regain the never open weight title in a rematch. He defeats Tai Chi and regains the never open weight title. So Will Ospreay went up to officials and said he is pretty much good to go, even though he was still had a bit of the rib injury going on. So New Japan officials declared that Tai Chi, who was the former champion, and Will Ospreay, since they never faced each other one-on-one, this would determine who would get the chance to face the never open weight champion, whether it be Ibushi or Goto, and have that match at Wrestle Kingdom 13. So that's a bit of the backstory there. And the main story of this match was that Ospreay was making his comeback, still holding on to that bit of that injury. And it was a very excellent story that they told with this, with the rib injury between Tai Chi and Ospreay. It was a much slower match than people were used to because, of course, Ospreay was selling the injury, but he did very well into this match. It was very slow starting off. Now Tai Chi was already in the ring waiting for Ospreay to make his way to the squared circle. Immediately, once Ospreay got into the ring and while the ring announcer was announcing Ospreay, Tai Chi, comes out with a mic stand as he sings his theme song, hits him immediately in the ribs before the bell even rang. And Tai Chi immediately won on the attack, stomping on Ospreay's taped ribs. Ospreay hit a monkey flip and rolled Tai Chi, and Tai Chi rolled out to the floor. Ospreay hit a springboard elbow off the barricade in that process. But the main focus was now Ospreay had to pretty much be in self-preservation mode to make sure that Tai Chi didn't hit the ribs as much as possible. Now, Ospreay hits a suicide dive, and the action went out to the main ramp. They went back inside. Ospreay went for a springboard attack, but Tai Chi whipped the referee into the ropes, and that immediately knocked Ospreay off, being, the heel that Tai Chi is. And he immediately went on the attack on Ospreay. He then takes him out to the outside. He then went on the outside, and drops Ospreay right on the barricade, right on those ribs. He then rips off Ospreay's tape and began using an abdominal stretch. Words are hard, guys. Ospreay comes back with a handspring kick. He then hits an enziguri and a 619 and follow that up with a springboard form, for a two count. Ospreay was teasing his finisher, going for Stormbreaker, but his ribs gave way to the amount of pain that he just used during the last attack that he went for before the two count. He couldn't lift Tai Chi at all. Tai Chi then went back on the attack, hits a pair of kicks on Ospreay that dropped him immediately to the mat. They started exchanging strikes. Tai Chi drops Ospreay with a mid kick. Ospreay then catches another kick, drops him to his knees, Taichi then hits a buzzsaw kick for a near fall. Now, after this, Taichi goes for pants off, dance off, takes off his pants. Don't worry, it's not as weird as you think. He had trunks underneath, guys. Relax. The visual ain't as bad as it is. Ospreay then goes for a side suplex, goes up to the top. He went for a shooting star press. Taichi got his knees up in the process and went for the pinfall, and surprisingly, that got a 2.9. Taichi then goes for an axe bomber, hits that, goes for a near fall. Taichi at this point was trying to take Ospreay out as soon as possible. Goes for a last ride power bomb. Ospreay escapes that. He goes for an Oz cutter, but Taichi blocked it immediately. Taichi then did hit the Ospreay, I should say, hits his Robinson special, that insane 637-20 kick to the face. I don't know how he still hit that. Goes for another Oz cutter, but Taichi turned that into a high angle suplex that rocked Ospreay hard. He hits the last ride powerbomb. That only got a near fall. Crowd started hyping up Ospreay, trying to get him back into the match. Ospreay hit an amazing the Canadian Destroyer. That only got a 2 count. He goes for Stormbreaker again. Taichi blocks it. Ospreay goes for it a second time. Taichi slips out. Ospreay then hits an amazing standing Spanish fly, hits a kick to the face of Taichi, and then finally, with all the strength that he could hit, he hits Stormbreaker, and he gets the pinfall victory. He is now the number one contender to the NEVER Openweight Championship. It was a really, really good match between these two, with the story of Ospreay having a fight with the industry, with the rib injury. I'm telling you guys, words are hard, and I had more than enough coffee this morning, I swear. With that rib injury, fighting through the pain, Taichi Kent giving him everything he could handle, and still, Ospreay had enough to beat Taichi. Now the number one contender, now he awaits who wins the NEVER Openweight Championship. And that was right after this match. Kota Ibushi and Hiroki Goto. The video package that they had for this match was back on the 18th of November. Ibushi, I think, on Twitter was trying to get Goto to challenge him for the NEVER Openweight Championship. Goto, it took a little bit of reverse psychology to get Ibushi to agree to the match. Goto and Ibushi was booked for World Tag League Final, but this was a match Ibushi wanted very badly, and it's a match that I didn't know I wanted until it came down to it. So this was a pretty cool thing to see. They shook hands, of course, the opening bell as a sign of respect to each other, because these two definitely faced each other this past year. I believe Ibushi and Goto faced twice. And Ibushi did beat Goto twice. I think once he beat him during the G1 climax. So this was a huge match for Goto to try and get the victory and solidify his spot in Wrestle Kingdom 13. What, albeit a Chaos Faction matchup between himself and Ospreay, which at this point, which is something I actually thought was going to happen. I thought Ibushi was going to lose to Goto. Goto would get his victory back, and we would get Goto Ospreay. I did not know people were pining for an Ibushi-Ospreay match. So there was a lot on the line and two good matches that would have come out of this. Either way, you slice that. So after they shook hands, Ibushi tried to pull him in and try to whip him into the corner. But Goto used the handshake, showing off his strength, tried to go for Ushigoroshi early. Ibushi blocked it. Ibushi hits a mid-kick, and Goto goes down. Ibushi then hits a snap Hurricane Rana, and Goto immediately goes to the floor. Goto then jumps back inside, hits a mean lariat. Ibushi drops to the apron on his head and neck. Now, I didn't see that spot happen. The camera didn't go to him at all. They didn't go to that spot. Kevin Kelly was trying to call for the replay, but they didn't show it. They didn't have a replay to call, so they had to go off what they saw, and if it's any indication, it probably looks supremely gruesome. Goto immediately goes out on the attack after the neck, drapes Ibushi on the top rope and hits a hanging neck breaker. Goes for the pinfall, but Ibushi grabs the ropes. The wherewithal to grab the rope. And I like the fact that Kevin Kelly uses this little detail that usually Ibushi kicks out instead of using the rope break. But in this kind of situation, anything helps, especially a rope break. So Goto goes for another neck breaker, trying to weaken the neck. He then applies a head scissors, but Ibushi gets the ropes and forced a rope break. Goto hits a leg sweep and then applies an octopus hold on the mat, trying to weaken the neck even more. Again, Ibushi reaches the ropes and forces a break. Ibushi, they both men get the reset, they get back up. Ibushi hits a drop kick and Goto rolls to the floor. Ibushi then goes for a golden triangle moonsault. That was very, very clean. Drops Goto, throws him back inside, and hits a standing moonsault that only got a two count. Goto then hits a high kick, then hits a suplex. That got a near fall. Goto then hits a leg lariat, goes to the top rope. Ibushi cuts him off as they trade shots on the ropes. Goto goes for a code red off the top rope, but Ibushi, with the agility that this man has, flips out of it and lands on his feet, hits a huge lariat into a double down. Both men are on the floor, laying on the mat. Ibushi was the first one up. Goes for the last ride powerbomb. Goto blocks that. Ibushi then hits a high kick. Goes for the Kamigoye, that mean knee that he has with Kenny Omega when they go for their finisher, the golden trigger. Goto blocks that, picks him up, and hits the Ushigoroshi on his neck, and that laid him out, and he was suffering from the pain in the back of his neck. He then goes for the sleeper hold. And as at this point, I'm thinking, okay, this could be it. I mean, he was really, if any of you listen to the podcast, watch MMA, you know that a rear naked choke is one of the best submission holds in the game, and a very popular submission hold for most MMA fighters. It definitely, if done correctly, can really put you to sleep. Trust me, I've been put in one, and I've been put to sleep. I'm not gonna lie, for a quick couple seconds I was night, so I understand what that feels like. So Goto gets Ibushi gets back up, tries to get out of it, but Goto immediately goes back to the sleeper hold. They traded cradles for near falls right after this. All being near falls, Goto went for a couple GTR attempts, reverses were made. Ibushi then hits a headbutt right on the back of Goto's head. Ibushi then goes for a straitjacket suplex attempt. Goto blocks that. Ibushi hits the Kamigoye. No, actually hits a knee strike. I'm sorry, a V-trigger like knee. A headbutt right after that. Goto drops to his knees. Ibushi grabs Goto's arms, hits him with a Kamigoye, and that was enough to beat Goto. And we are getting Ibushi Ospreay at Wrestle Kingdom 13 for the Never Open Weight Championship. Ospreay immediately came out after the match and cut his promo. Some people were saying this was a dream match. He challenges Ibushi immediately. I want you for the title at Wrestle Kingdom 13. They shake hands as a sign of respect, and the match was made. Ibushi Ospreay at Wrestle Kingdom 13 for the Never Openweight title. I am so excited for this match. It's one of those matches where I didn't see it coming, but I'm really excited that it's going to go down. I'm really, really excited to see what Ibushi and Ospreay are going to do and the matches they're going to be involved in on this coming weekend. On the road to Wrestle Kingdom 13, it's going to be crazy if they get involved in like a tag match or something like that, because then we get to see a nice little preview between these two. We then get to the main event, the World Tag League 2018 Finals. Guerrillas of Destiny versus LIJ's Evil and Sanada. Both teams came into this match with 20 points, all of them winning 10 matches. This was a rematch of their finals match from last year where Evil and Sanada beat Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. This was probably the best match of the night, hands down. I'm not even going to lie to you guys. This was the match of the night without question. This was so good. Before the match even started, introductions were being made. Jado was with Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa at ringside. He had a kendo stick in hand. While Evil and Sanada were making their way into the corner to get to pick who was going to start the match, Jado hits Evil in the back with the kendo stick, and immediately Tonga Loa and Tama Tonga are on the attacks, throwing both members onto to the floor. Tama Tonga and Sanada went one way. Loa went after Evil in the other. Loa and Evil stayed at ringside, and as Loa was attacking Evil, Tonga and Sanada went into the crowd and went all the way back to the arena wall. Tonga then threw Sanada into the arena wall. Sanada actually reversed one and we tried to get a second hit and reversed it and sent Tonga into the arena wall. Referee had no choice but to start the 20 count. when it started getting to 15, Sanada starts running back to the ring, Tonga trying to attack him on the way there. When it got to 19, both Tonga and Sanada beats the count to continue the matchup. So it was Tonga and Sanada to start the match. Sanada went for a standing moonsault. He missed that. Tonga hits a back elbow right on Sanada's head. Tonga and Loa started working Sanada over in their corner. Evil was still out on the floor at this point after the attack by Tonga Loa and Jado with the kendo stick hit. Loa then hits a running power slam. That only got a two count. Sanada goes for the drop kick again and misses that. And Loa hits an elbow drop that got a two count. Sanada then hits a drop kick off the second on Tonga, but Tonga was able to tag Loa in the process and keep the pressure on Sanada. Sanada finally gets a chance to Evil actually gets back up to the apron. Sanada finally tags in Evil. Evil started going all types of ape shit. Hits a bulldog and a senton on Loa. That got a near fall. He then went for a fisherman buster, but Loa countered it into a nice suplex. He then goes up to the top and hits a superplex on Evil. Sanada jumps in to help out, but dropkick Tonga off the apron. Now, Tonga broke, Evil and Sanada went for the magic killer on Loa, but Tonga broke that up with a spear. He then hits a gun stun on Loa that covered Evil for a near fall. Like I said, words are hard. My goodness, I had more than enough coffee today to know words. So, before I continue talking about the match, one thing I liked about what Kevin Kelly had said is that before Anderson and Gallows went to the WWE as the club, Anderson gifted the gun stun to Tama Tonga. He gave him the blessing to use his finishing move, the gun stun, in matches. And both Gallows and Anderson gave the blessing to the Gorillas of Destiny when they were members of, the Bullet Club, to let them use the magic killer. So they gave them, within the confines of professional wrestling, most people, I know there's a lot of people that do the Canadian Destroyer. This is just one finishing move. The only person I know, the main originator of the Canadian Destroyer was none other than Petey Williams. If you don't know who Petey Williams is, he was a former wrestler in TNA, who was a former X Division champion, and his Canadian Destroyer was his finishing move. I love that move with every part of my being. A front flip pile driver is just crazy to use, and a lot of people do use it in matches. The only person that I know of, and this, I think at All In, they actually said this on commentary, the only person that got the blessing to actually use it, full on, like there's people that still use it, Petey Williams actually gave the blessing to Chelsea Green, of all people, to actually use the front flip pile driver. That's not to say no one else can use it, but... And even, I think Petey Williams said it himself on Twitter, like, yes, I am allowing Chelsea Green to use my finisher fully. I mean, there's a lot of teams, they had the backstory with Tama Tonga that he was very pissed off that Evil and Sanada were actually using the magic killer as a finisher. That pissed him off completely. So that was just a little backstory on as to why the magic killer really pissed off Tama Tonga. So that's a little backstory there. So getting back into the match. After the near fall, Loa sent Evil outside of the ring. Jado nails him again with the kendo stick, and Loa then whips Sanada into the barricade, trying to break them down a little bit more. Once they get back inside, Tonga hits a jumping elbow drop for a two count. Tonga works over Evil with right hands, then Tonga hits a standing frog splash. The agility of this man is just second to none. That only got a near fall on Evil. Loa gets the tag. Evil was about to get hit with a powerbomb. He backdropped out of it. Goes for a tag, but Tonga jumped in at the last second and knocked Sanada off the apron. Tonga and Loa hit Guerrilla Warfare, one of the finishers that they use. Tonga and Loa were about to go to the top rope. They hit, Stereo Splashes. Excuse me. Sanada cuts off Tonga at the pass. While Tama Tonga was trying to get Sanada out of the way, he told Loa to go ahead and go for the headbutt. He goes off the top rope but misses with the diving headbutt. They go Evil and Sanada then try to go for a superplex spot. Loa then gets up, had the wherewithal, and picks up both men. And we have, of course, the infamous Tower of Doom spot. And that looked, and this in this case, most of the time it doesn't really work out. This one was actually pretty darn good. Anything more than four men on a Tower of Doom spot, it just gets super fucking ridiculous. I've seen that eight-man Tower of Doom spot. I didn't like it at all. It was kind of beat. I think that was like a Hurricane Rana, double power bomb, seven-man thing. Anything more than four, I discount it 100%. So after all four men are downed after this point, Loy covers Evil at the wherewithal to couple Evil for a two count. Loy went for a lariat. Evil blocks it. Both men hit lariats on each other. They go for a misdirection spot. Evil hits a lariat, and that enabled both men to tag out. Sonata then goes outside, hits Giotto with a plancha, taking him out of the equation, then immediately hits planchas on both Tonga and Loa. Sonata is a beast in the ring, and he's definitely one of my favorites in New Japan. If you don't remember him, he was actually at one point in Impact Wrestling. Before Impact Wrestling was Impact Wrestling, he was actually part of the X Division when Impact Wrestling was actually TNA. Little sidebar there, getting back into the match, though. So Sonata and Tonga, I believe Sonata went for a moonsault. Kind of a little bit of a botch there, but we get past that. Sonata goes for a skull end. Tonga, though, gets a standing switch. Sonata hits the ropes, but Loa tripped him in the process. Then Tonga and Loa hit Sonata with an assistant neck breaker. Sonata kicks out of that move. They go for the magic killer themselves. Sonata gets out of it, but ran into a kendo stick shot by Giotto, and that almost got the victory for the Gorilla Destiny. But Sonata kicks out at two. Tonga and Loa then hit the magic killer again. Go for the second time, actually. They hit this time. Evil jumps in to break up the pinfall at the very last second. Loa then hits a spear on Evil. Tonga hits a splash in the corner. They go for the super power bomb, but Sonata actually countered with a Hurricane Rana. Evil jumps in. They go for the magic killer. Tonga kicks Sonata off into the ref, and the ref, of course, Mr. Red Shoes, takes a bump in this match. Giotto tries to go in and go for the kendo stick shot one more time, but he in the process took a magic killer. He goes out to the outside. Sonata then reverses a Tongan twist, and he gets that into Skulland. Tonga Loa actually broke up the submission attempt. Evil hits Loa with one of his finishing move, Everything is Evil. Tonga then goes for a gun stun, but Evil blocks it. They hit Tonga with the magic killer, but somehow Tonga kicks out of the finishing move. Evil then goes for Darkness Falls, the powerbomb on Tonga. Sonata then hits a moonsault, and that was more than enough to beat Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, getting the three count, and Evil and Sonata are now your two-time World Tag League 2018 tournament champions. This was an absolute barn burner, and I guarantee you this match right now will at least be on my honorable mentions for 2018 list. This was a solid tag match between two tag teams who I hold in high regard. And to be honest, two of my favorite tag teams in the world, hands fucking down, along with the Bucks and a couple other tag teams. I love this match. Anytime when it's G.O.D. and Evil and Sonata, you know damn well they are going to go at it with everything they got. And this match was no exception. Now, a bigger story came out of this match. While Evil and Sonata were cutting their promo, being the two-time champs, the Young Bucks actually came into the ring, which was very interesting. Matt Jackson said that Evil and Sonata were the best team in the tournament, but he said the Bucks are the best team in the world. And this was a key thing that Matt had said here. They never got their rematch after losing the tag team championships. I believe it was back at, Destruction pay-per-view. They lost their titles to Gorillas of Destiny, but they never got the rematch. They never invoked their rematch clause, and they felt that they should be the next challengers to the Gorillas of Destiny for the Tag Team Championships, even though Evil and Sonata had just won the World Tag League tournament that guaranteed them a shot at the heavyweight tag titles. So after the Bucks leave, Evil actually said, and this is just translated, so I don't know if they actually said this, but I'm going to go with it. How about a three-way at Wrestle Kingdom 13? The Bucks were left before that was said. And from what I'm hearing, and what I and I accidentally effed around and saw the card for Wrestle Kingdom 13, that is going to be the match for Wrestle Kingdom 13. It is going to be the Gorillas of Destiny defending the IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championships against the World Tag League 2018 champions, Evil and Sonata, and the Young Bucks. What? When I first, now, mind you, I have seen the entire card for Wrestle Kingdom 13. I won't discuss, I'm not going to discuss the card. I may show the, I may find it on Instagram and then post it on my Instagram page, just so you know what is going to be going down at Wrestle Kingdom 13. I will not be making any predictions on this card until I believe I'll probably do it on when I'm on vacation in Denver. Yes, I do take vacations. Yeah, I'm taking one at the end of this year. So the first, so I'll just give you a nice little announcement. The first show of 2018 will be live from Denver. We'll be at my boy's house out there, just enjoying a few days off from work because I got vacation time and that's always good for me and I get paid to do so. Thanks, work. Appreciate it. So yeah, the first show of the new year will be live from Denver. I'm gonna be doing my prediction show for Wrestle Kingdom 13 from there, and I'm more than likely will be watching Wrestle Kingdom 13 while I'm at the airport. So I will be covering that probably after I get back from vacation. So just know, be prepared for that. There will be a Wrestle Kingdom 13 preview and prediction show. This was a great show overall. This is absolutely fantastic from beginning to end. I know usually seeing a lot of tag matches is never really the most fun thing for a lot of pro wrestling fans, but when it comes to New Japan, they absolutely do it right. We actually got a couple singles matches out of it. You know, the Osprey Tai Chi match was darn good. The Goto Ibushi match was really fucking good. And then of course the main event was just absolutely spectacular. Top to bottom, a great show to watch. If you have time to do so, please go back and watch World Tag League 2018. If you got 3 hours of time, close to four, this was actually a 4 hour show that I was not disappointed in at all. Usually, most 4 hour shows on WWE, I'm just asleep by 2 hours. But this was a very, very good show. Great show overall. I love everybody who was involved in it. And now we are officially on the road to Wrestle Kingdom 13. Team. Well, guys, that's going to be it for episode 32 of the Young Lions Perspective. As always, I want to thank you guys so much for taking time out of your day, your night, your afternoon, your brunch, your gym time, snack time, your break time from work, whatever time you're checking out this podcast, wherever you may be, wherever you are in the world. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast. I greatly and truly appreciate it. If you are wanting to listen to this episode again or any of the other 31 episodes that I have on the podcast, but you don't have the Anchor app, and honestly, why don't you? This is probably the best app in the game for podcasts and definitely one of the up-and-coming apps for podcasting. You can check me out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Stitcher Radio, and of course, that good old Spotify. Bam! Search for the Young Lions Perspective on any of those platforms, and you should have no problem finding it whatsoever. If you want to keep up with me on my social media and check out any of the episodes or any details of any episodes that I may have upcoming, you can follow me on Twitter at SuedeSenatorWWY and on Instagram. And like I said last episode, I changed the name from SuedeSenatorWWY to now Young underscore Lions underscore Perspective. Follow me on those platforms and keep up with the latest news that I have for the show. Guys, tomorrow I have a day off from work, which means we're going to be talking about episode 33 NXT review. And actually, I almost fucking forgot that Sunday is TLC, Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. So we're going to, in the opening segment of the show, we're going to be doing TLC preview and predictions. You're getting a double show. You get two for the price of one. I was thinking about doing them separately, but then I realized, you know what? Let's just pack it all into one crazy jam-packed show. So you're going to get the preview and predictions plus NXT review from tonight's episode, guys. Enjoy the rest of your day. Get ready for tomorrow because it's going to be a 2-for-1 show, guys. Enjoy your time. We'll be back soon. See ya!